Hello everyone, welcome. This is Ian and it's just 8 o'clock. I hope you can hear me loud and clear. Using the add-on mic here, which I've done a test through, it seems to be responding, so only let me know if you can't hear me. I'm assuming otherwise that you can. Okay, thank you guys. As before, I'm going to just start the ball rolling. I've got a few email queries and comments which I'll weave in somewhere, and as before, if you can keep the text chat to a minimum at the first part so we're not too distracted by that, and I'm also going to leave the video off for now so that we don't get caught up in the lack of bandwidth and suffer with that. This is the third webinar, and seem to come around quickly. First of all, just apologies for changing the date last week. I'm in the midst of a rather busy travel period. Just came back from Cairo today, and off again tomorrow. So glad that many of you could make it. Apologies to those of you who couldn't, but we are recording, so you won't miss it altogether. Also, just a quick apology about the remaining videos. I've discovered that some of the video recordings we made at the last weekend, the picture quality is perfect, but we don't have the sound for some reason. And it's very strange. It worked perfectly on the first three and then not on the fourth. And subsequently, two of the remaining four of the second day also without sound. So that's a bit of a drag, but I was recording sound independently. It's not as good quality, or again, I'm not sure why, but it's probably good enough with the volume up. So what I've been attempting to do is to sync the two things together, which has been proven so far to be a little bit beyond my technical capabilities, but I'm getting close. If I can't manage it, then what I'll do is just put the audio up for the ones that where the video is a silent movie. And at least you can listen to the audio. It should be clear enough. You'll at least hear me and some of the questions. Okay, so technicalities aside, we're underway for this evening. And first off, I just wanted to address something which it comes up in different ways, and it keeps coming up. And it's to do with this. It's to do with this word understanding, which is something that I've probably used. It is often used when we talk about this. We say it's not to do with, it's not about learning a technique. It's not something that we learn to apply or use as a tool in as we normally think of psychological tools and so forth. So then we have to try and define it as something else, and it often use the word understanding. But I had I remembered recently a quote which I heard somebody give years and years ago. It was a guy called Werner Erhard, who some of you may know of his work. And he said somewhere, he said, understanding is the booby prize. And it was one of those things that has stayed with me ever since. That's probably 25, 30 years ago that I heard that. And what I took from that was that understanding is always a poor substitute for experience. And certainly the kind of, when we typically use that term, the kind of understanding we're talking about is when we've arrived at something through reasoning or a process of comparing something new to something that we already know, seeing how it fits, where it ties in, somehow integrating it into what we already knew. And you could say, in a way, expanding our consciousness, but it's a different kind of getting to grips with something than seems to be required for this. And what I find is one of the more challenging things to put across is that it's not that kind of understanding. It's more a change in the way of seeing that we're talking about here. And when we see, literally see the world through different eyes, then we experience a different world and a different light, a different life. And you could call it a perception shift, I suppose, rather than an understanding. To me, that would be a better terminology, or even a realization. And realization has that, it has the word real hidden within it. And when we realize something, we fully realize it, then it has the quality of being real to us. Whereas we can understand things to a certain level, and yet it doesn't necessarily impact in our life experience that much. You know, like you can ask any smoker if smoking is good for them. They understand full well that it's not, but it doesn't impact on their behavior. That kind of understanding, that kind of knowledge is not powerful enough to actually change behavior. Whereas when we have a realization and we really literally see it for ourselves, and it has a kind of revelatory quality to it. It's like, ah, I never saw it that way before. I never thought about it that way before. Then it automatically brings a shift with it. And for me, that there is a corresponding feeling of shift. It's a relatively instantaneous thing. It's not something that takes a time duration, for it to take place. It literally is an instantaneous, seeing something that you couldn't see before, or seeing things in a way that you've never seen them before. And the paradox, of course, is that you're looking out at the same things and people and life circumstances initially, and yet you're looking from a different place inside yourself somehow. That's how it feels to me. So on the one hand, nothing's changed from that realization. At least nothing outside of you has changed yet. And yet, everything seems different. And that's the really paradoxical but also miraculous quality of this, is that things are not seemingly fixed in any particular way. They just look like they are. So that what looked like very stubborn circumstances, difficulties, problems, or stubborn people behaving in a certain way, which appears to have been winding us up, can appear to change very, very quickly, almost immediately. And yet, they didn't learn it. They didn't knowingly alter or deliberately alter their behavior or shuffle around the life circumstances that surround us. It's simply our perception that's changed. That allows us to see things differently and also to take them in differently. So, what we're dealing with is this incredibly simple and basic fact that all, not just some, but all of our feelings are internally self-generated through the medium of thought. And even when there's an outside stimulus for that thought, whatever happens on the outside is not affecting us or impacting us on us directly, but always indirectly through this thought filter. Hence, the same thing can happen to us on different occasions, and yet how we feel about it can change radically from one occasion to the next, and consequently our ability to respond to it changes also. So we can get into a same what looks like a same pattern, but we're not forced to always respond in the same way. And literally, when we have a different awareness, when we approach the same, what has been a difficult circumstance from that new place inside of ourselves, we do have access to creative possibilities that we didn't have before. And in that sense, insoluble becomes soluble quite quickly. Impossible becomes possible. Suddenly we have choices. I think it does pay to kind of reconcile ourselves to the consistency and the reliability of this. At some point, it seems to me that that's where we're headed. We're headed towards recognizing that this is not it. It's not something which applies just some of the time when it suits us. And it's not something which only, let's say, superficially has got any superficial relevance for us. On the contrary, It's something which, first of all, applies across the board in terms of our entire life experience is coming through the same filter, which is why one of the wonderful things about this is that there's no requirement to concentrate on a particular area of life and say, okay, I'm going to apply it here, I'm going to apply it there. That's automatically already happening. It's being applied. So we are experiencing life in every facet through this same mechanism already. And I suppose whenever we're not responding well to life, or we feel like we've been tripped up by life or even victimized by life in some way, it's still our thinking that's behind what we're feeling. The only difference there is that we're blind to it in those areas, temporarily blind to it. And of course, the areas where life seems to be doing it to us, it corresponds exactly to the areas that we think that the three principles don't apply. It's not, there's no coincidence in that, I'm sure. These are the very areas, the areas where we still find ourselves caught, and we still struggle with something. We struggle to see how it could have anything to do with us or our own thinking. The areas, as I say, where life seems to be doing it to us, these are exactly the areas where we would claim exception. Where we would say, okay, well, I could understand how it applies here and here, but not here. So it seems that in a way, that helps us to see how we're doing. That's part of the feedback we get. We talked about how we get the feedback from our feelings about you could say, the reliability of our perception, of our thinking in any moment. But we also get the feedback from the outside world and from you could say, the pleasantness or otherwise of our life experience. So in that sense, the more struggle we caught up in, the more difficulty, the more of a repeating pattern or a stuck situation. These are the things that catch our attention, and usually they're the things that we start applying ourselves to mentally and possibly physically as well. And you could take this as a sure signal that we're not yet able to see our own creative input in these areas. These are the very areas where we get busy on the outside, of course. We get busy doing, we get busy trying to figure things out, we get busy trying to find impose a solution of some kind. So consequently, those areas are often the ones that are draining for us. They take, let's say, disproportionate amounts of our time and energy. So it's a good, I think it pays just to notice these things, not in a way to beat ourselves up. We're probably doing enough of that already, but just to notice, the areas where we're still invested in it, having something to do with somebody else or some life circumstance or some event. Those are the areas where we're going to struggle with life. And as soon as we start to be able to see, even if it's just a glimpse, that, oh no, that wasn't what I thought, that wasn't as real as I thought it was, I can see now how much of that I was self-created. In fact, then the next step is seeing how all of my experience of that was self-created. And then seeing the miracle, even if it's in a very relatively small area of life, seeing how quickly our life experience can turn around in that area. The other thing I wanted to mention is how we develop blind spots, literally blind spots for what's right in front of our eyes if it doesn't correspond with our ideas of what's true and real. We literally eliminate. We selectively eliminate things that are right in front of us as if they weren't there. You probably had the experience of when you lose your wallet or your keys temporarily or your passport or anything that you're invested in not losing, and momentarily it ceases to exist. It's literally gone. Somebody in one of the, I think it was in the group in Croatia, talked about this woman had had €1,000 stashed somewhere, and she probably turned the house upside down trying to find it, and convinced herself that it had probably been stolen, or you know, she'd lost it on the bus or something daft like this. And after the first day when I spent with the group, and she started to consider this possibility, not in regard to this particular thing. This was something that had happened I think weeks before. But when she came in the next day, one of the side effects she reported was that she'd been rummaging and she'd looking for something else in one of her handbags, and there was this €1,000 just sitting there. And it seems she'd used this handbag many times in the interim period, and she probably had actually seen, it probably had been in front of her eyes, the missing money. She may have even touched it with her fingers, and yet it wasn't there for her. So convincing is our thinking that we literally develop a temporary blind spot. And there must be so many areas in life where we're doing that. I think particularly the area where we can't see something as being possible for us. And it's literally true. If we can't see it as being possible, if we can't imagine it, it isn't possible for us in that moment. And yet, the moment that we can allow for that possibility, there it is. It's right there. Again, with nothing outside us changing. And I suppose the other side of that coin is that we also hallucinate things. We imagine that we've seen things which don't exist also. And that would be the other side of it. If you're a little bit paranoid, for example, a person who thinks that people are watching them or spying on them or in some way out to get them, all you have to do is walk down Oxford Street and, you know, you would find a ready collection of candidates who you'd be able to point the finger at and say, see, look at that, look how that one's looking at me. See that guy there? And it would really look that way. Because, you know, people do catch eyes as they're walking past each other on the street. But to the paranoid person, the one whose eyes just happen to catch momentarily, which happens all the time, must be looking at me. They must be out to get me, or they're spying on me, or something of this kind. So it's very interesting how what we're exploring here is something which is entirely internal. It's one of the things I like about it, is that there is nothing to do on the outside. There's nothing to change on the outside. And very little to change on the inside also, actually. And yet, not only does our internal experience change, but the reflecting mirror, which is the outside world, does seem to become much more malleable, let's say, when we start to see just how quickly it can change in response to a change in our consciousness, in our thought. I was thinking earlier, if you're a nostalgic type, or you get into nostalgic kind of thinking, you might want to go back sometime and revisit a familiar childhood landmark, or you know, some place that impressed you or that you really loved earlier in your life. And you could do that only to find that it doesn't look quite as impressive now as you remembered it. Probably most of you will have had that experience at some point, and consequently you maybe feel a bit disappointed, a bit let down, and you start to wonder what people did to this thing, or what happened to it in the intervening time. And it might be that nothing happened to it, it's just our perception of it has changed over time, so consequently we experience it differently. You know, things that impressed us when we were younger, we go back there with a different consciousness. Similarly, if you have say you have insecure thoughts in a relationship, for example, you could start feeling anxious and jealous, and whatever your partner does or doesn't do or says or doesn't say, it'll start to seem to you that they really are behaving in a way that's confirming what you're thinking about them. It's coming through that distorting lens now. So even if they say something, that becomes an object of your anxiety or suspicion. And if they don't say something, well, they're hiding something from you. So it seems through those eyes. And then, of course, we try and persuade them that it's them that needs to change so that we can relax and feel better. We all know that doesn't work. I was talking to some graduating homeopaths in Cairo. There's a group there that I spent the day with. And it's interesting when you've got a group, you know, they've all studied together, they've all absorbed, they've been exposed to at least the same material. And yet the spectrum of what they see as being possible is very, very wide. So you get the ones who are chomping at the bit and raring to go, and they've already got their practices up and running more or less, and so on. And then you'll get a few others in the same room, and they've probably studied at least as hard as the others, if not harder. And they'll say, "Well, I don't think I'm ready yet. I don't think I know enough yet. And I'm probably going to do some more postgrad training before I think about practicing or something like that." And for someone who's in that way of thinking, that will seem absolutely real to them. I noticed that there's nothing that anyone in the room could say that will persuade them that they might be ready to start practicing now. You know, it just doesn't seem like an option to them, and therefore it isn't. It's not actually available to them at that point. All they can see is the possibility is that they need extra training, they need to do maybe some more clinical hours, maybe they need to attend more seminars and so forth. So there's so many areas in life where we are getting this distortion. And yet, because it shows up so convincingly each time, we don't necessarily recognize it as a distortion that's happening as a result of our own thinking. We're very prone to take it as being reality. And often when we take it as being reality, it has a quality of being a bit fixed, somewhat difficult to change. Whereas if you can take the same thing and see it as a product of your own thinking, that's just the way I'm seeing it now. It might not be the way it actually is. Just that starts to make it a bit more negotiable, shall we say. Because we all know that thinking changes. Thinking can and does change. Thought changes very quickly. And there's nothing solid or substantial about thought. It's just that when we keep thinking a certain way, then our life experience corresponds to that. But that doesn't mean it can't change. So recognizing that we are the creators of our own life experience, and that there's no life circumstance that we can ever be properly stuck in, shall we say, or that's ever as impossible as it looks. We can start to see the fluidity of it, really. I think that's that to me is one of the other nice benefits of this. Another thing that came up was questions around physical issues, things to do with physical pain, energy levels, symptoms, that kind of thing. You know, surely these are exceptions. Surely that's not passing through the filter of thought. You know, things are just happening in the body independently of thought. And that may be true. Who knows? We do live in the biological realm as well as the psychological realm. So I would certainly be open to that possibility. And yet, you would think that, you know, maybe, you know, the body just hurts or gets overtired and that's that. And in that sense, again, it has nothing to do with us. And yet we all know from our own experience that it's not as clear cut as that at all. That there is a very, very large subjective element to things like physical pain, tiredness levels, energy levels, and so forth. I may have mentioned a guy that came to one of the workshops I did, who he told me this, told a story to the group of how when he was younger he was chatting up a girl, hoping to get a date, and he was so enthralled with her that he had his hand in his jacket pocket. Every now and again he just noticed that there was this kind of wet sensation in his pocket. Periodically he'd have a passing thought, I wonder what that is. I don't remember having a bottle of water in there or anything, but anyway, stay tuned into the girl for a bit longer. And there it was again, this wetness. And eventually he pulls his hand out of his pocket, he's pouring with blood. And he'd had a razor, he'd had a cutthroat or some kind of razor, exposed razor blade in his pocket, which he'd been fondling with his fingers. And basically slashed his finger ends and felt no pain at all. Until he saw it. The moment he took his hand out and saw the blood pouring up his arm, he felt faint and immediately was in pain. So it's interesting that when our thought is completely absorbed in something else, away from what's happening in the body, then it seems that we can literally tune that out, and we do automatically tune it out. And there's many examples of that, actually. I've noticed things like when, you know, I fly a fair bit, and jet lag, people have all kinds of theories about jet lag. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's worse if you're traveling in this direction than that direction. And I've heard people argue for both directions. Probably the majority say it's worse coming east, but I've heard other people say it's worse going west. And, you know, I've noticed a lot of it depends on, well, what are you looking forward to? And there's a difference between the beginning of a trip and the end of a trip, psychologically. And these things really colour the experience, as far as I can tell. So, you know, yeah, it's physically tiring, and if you miss a certain amount of sleep, your body's going to feel that. But then there's always, what do we add to that with thinking? So we should at least, at the very least, I think we should acknowledge all the additional suffering that we generate through our thinking, which often may turn out to be the bulk of it, if not the entirety of it. I've noticed also that you know, if my sleep pattern's a bit messed up when I'm waking up in the middle of the night, which which I often am. You know, we've got a young kid, and as I say, I've spent a bit of time swapping time zones in the last few months, so I've had a few reasons why my body clock gets thrown off. And I've noticed that if I wake up at 3:30 in the morning and I see the clock and the clock shows me that it's 3:30, I have more trouble getting back to sleep than if I didn't see the clock, or if I didn't bother to look and see what time it is. And there's something about that, you know, the devil, you know, when you see it, you think, oh God, it's only 3:30, and then the thinking kicks in. Or maybe it's 5:30 and I start thinking, well, I've got to get up at 7. Maybe it's not worth going back to sleep. So, you know, maybe I'll just, you know. And again, once the thinking gets going, that changes the sleep pattern in itself. So it's to me, it's probably an area where there's more questions than answers. But the area that we can still pay attention to is the influence of our own thought. Even if there's maybe some pain coming from the body itself, we can say we're not self-generating it in any way that we're aware of, and yet what we are generating still is our experience of it, and we might be adding a lot to that, or we might not. A lot of people I've noticed, a lot of people who have some kind of symptom, or they get exhausted or whatever, very quickly they start beating themselves up for having done so. And you can see for sure that adds to the feeling of tiredness or the distress or the discomfort. So, you know, the person who starts saying, "Oh, I've overdone it, and I knew I shouldn't have done that and that and that, and I knew before I did it that I was going to end up feeling like this, and this is what I always do, and I'm so stupid," you know, and that kind of thing, and they don't necessarily connect that with how they're feeling. So there's often that it seems like they're two separate things. You know, I've got this problem, I've got this symptom, I've got this pain, this suffering, And now I'm finding these reasons to be self-critical or judgmental about it, but you don't realize that very type of thinking, critical thinking and self-judgment thinking and beating yourself up thinking, is in itself exhausting, and in itself it's painful. It creates a painful experience for us. So that's all I wanted to say about that. Let's see if any of those of you who are with us tonight, how many have we got on board? 15, is it? That includes me and Debbie. So a few missing tonight, but those of you who are here, if anybody wants to put anything into the mix, you can do so. You can either use the text there, or we can switch you on, and if you've got a mic connected, you can try test out the audio. Let's see. All very quiet out there tonight. That's nice. Anything anybody wants to share from your own experience? Wow. So everybody's either everybody's thinking got really quiet tonight, which is really nice. Or the technology is not working and you're trying to communicate with me and I'm not getting it. Anne, you've got something there, kind of realization, stroke awareness. Do you want to talk about it, or do you just want to type a little bit? If you type it in, I'll read it out so it goes onto the recording as well. But if you've got a mic attached, we could try and switch on you so you can broadcast to the rest of us. Do you want to give that a go? A bit tricky. It might be. Let's see. Okay, you can try it now, Anne. I'll just put you on to presenter status. So you need to go to the top left area of your screen. There's a button there, you can start broadcasting. Should give you that option. If it doesn't work, just use the typing. Any luck, Anne? Okay, doesn't seem to be happening for Anne. Not everybody's equipment or broadband speed is necessarily up to the minimum requirements, so it might be if you're running an old computer, say, or your system's a bit old, or your connection is a bit slow, it might be that you can't actually broadcast. So if you're still with us, Anne, just try and type something in. Just gives an idea of what it is that you wanted to share. Meanwhile, Alan, you've written some of my recent experience, most of which might be mind reading of other people, is that no thoughts seem real, and it has the feeling of losing all grip on reality. Yeah. Well, they're not that real, are they? I suppose. You know, in a way, that's it's kind of seeing them as they are, I would say. And it might be that you know, there's a signal there to you of starting to, you know, say that seems quite frightening. Well, I think it can be frightening when we've taken something as for being real that wasn't, and then it starts to show up in its true colours, shall we say. That can be frightening, yeah. And whether it's something outside of us that we thought was real, and we start to see that that isn't the case. But I would say more, even more strongly, when we talk about something like the ideas about ourself, and we took those as being real. You know, when we took ourself to be something, and we identified with it. And then whatever it was, whatever that we identified with, starts to reveal itself as being something quite insubstantial, or something that can change, or something that can fall away, then it does have a kind of, let's say, existential crisis feel to it, you know. If not this, then what? If I'm not this, then who am I? What remains? So I think if it's that kind of fear that you're talking about, Alan, that's, you know, that's in a way to be, to be expected, but it's not unusual. And the main thing there is to recognize that that's pretty normal, and it's pretty understandable, and that it passes. It's temporary. Ah, Dee Dee. Hi, Dee Dee. I have the impression that since starting, I seem to experience aggravation, as in a homeopathic term. So I seem to beat myself up when I forget to notice my thoughts, which is unhelpful. Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about earlier. Yeah. And of course, you know, if we have a self-critical tendency, which many of us do, then, or a perfectionist tendency, say, which is a variation on a theme, then we bring the same kind of critical or perfectionistic or controlling, whatever it happens to be, thinking to this as we would take to any other thing that we get involved in. So, just like I was saying earlier, if the homeopathic student feels like they haven't learnt enough yet or they're not good enough yet, they beat themselves up for that. But the three principal student can do the same thing. And it might be the same person. We can use the same destructive thought patterns towards ourselves around this as we do for anything else. But at least you're seeing that it's not helpful. And you can notice, I think it becomes more acute what that adds to the experience, how much unpleasantness it adds, how much extra suffering is created by that root. So at least that becomes more visible to us, even if we're still doing it. So these patterns of thinking, they don't necessarily all just fall away spontaneously by themselves, but at least we start to see the effect of them, and we start to see that that's just a way of thinking, and that we're going to end up feeling bad about ourselves if we persist in that line of thinking, no matter what it's about. The content is irrelevant. Anne, you came back. Yeah, it didn't work out with the broadcasting. I don't know what, maybe some technical issues have got in the way there. But anyway, you've written, I realize that the past is gone and the future hasn't happened, and that my inner core is constantly there and very powerful, and I can just experience what's going on around me. Well, that's very true. And yet, it's one of those things that, we can read that in Eckhart Tolle, or The Power of Now, or I think we can read it in 100 different sources actually. But if I'm hearing you right through what you've written, what I'm picking up there is that you've kind of seen that in a more real way. And that's exactly what I was talking about in the beginning, the difference between just understanding the theory, knowing the idea, and actually seeing differently. So that you really do see that. You catch a glimpse of the possibility of present time experience, which is not being contaminated or tainted by memories from the past, or by fantasy projections into the future. And just getting a glimpse of how life is from that place. It's a different life. Especially if you've been a either habitual worrier or someone who's habitually dwelling on or visiting past things and letting that be a strong influence. If your life has been very strongly coloured by certain memories, or you spend a lot of time going into imaginary futures, and you have moments where you're not doing that, they suddenly seem quite striking. And what a relief. It's very nice to experience that and to really get the feel of that, to notice how different that feels. Saying, and you've mentioned that, and yeah, it's now when I reread Eckhart, it makes sense. Yeah, I had the same experience, and I still do. So going back to these things that we've kind of studied and we've known theoretically, but not to the degree that it's had a great impact on our life. And suddenly you go back to it, and it's like, oh. It's almost like you get a little glimpse through his eyes momentarily. He's like, now I know why he wrote that in that way. Because that's where he was seeing from when he wrote it. And in order to really understand that, you have to be seeing from that place yourself, at least momentarily. And then you get it. It's kind of neat. Leslie in Ireland, yeah, I got the three-piece self-beating too. Two big arguments, one with the sister, and then a few days later with daughter. But I got over it. Well, we do get over it, and that's the good news. Yeah, so there's at least a couple of areas where we can get let's say negative 3P side effects. One is we use it as a reason to beat ourselves up because we're not getting it like everybody else, which of course is nonsense. And the other is to try and 3P everybody around us. But they ought to get frustrated because they're not getting it. or, you know, to try and impose it on people who don't really want to hear it. That's another area we can get to negative three-piece side effects, I think. But, yeah, just noticing these things, letting them pass, and not adding to it, that's fine. I think, you know, we all have our good days and our not so good days. But I think there's a general direction is established once you start to spend some time with this and keep, you know, just keep revisiting it and dipping into it and so forth. It does have a kind of percolation effect over time. So in the midst of that, we're going to have ups and downs, better days, not so good days. But over a longer span, we start to see a gradual healing and softening of some of the hard edges. Anne, you've mentioned there, I'm living through what previously would have been so upsetting and stressful, and now I can just observe it and be. Yeah, that's a great side effect. That's a great thing to notice, when you can just take stock and say, well, blimey, you know, under normal conditions, if I was in this circumstance or going through what I'm going through, I'd be a mess, or, you know, I'd be really struggling with it, or I'd be really beating myself up, and I'm not. And just to notice that and to credit yourself for having found a completely different way of relating to difficulty, then that's great. That's a good sign. Debbie, you've mentioned there, I'm enjoying how being aware of my thinking brings me back to the calmness of the present moment. Yeah, me too. And I also experience moments when I feel that anything is possible. Yes. And I can live the life I want. Absolutely. This is the truth. Not all the time, but this knowing occurs to me more and more often. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So even if we forget, it's not, we don't forget forever. And for me, that was part of the reason that I wanted to build a time duration into this, you know. Even though I was asking myself, just as some of you have asked me, you know, if we can understand this in a couple of minutes, why are we spending 5 weekends and 10 webinars? Well, the thing is, we forget, and we, you know, we get it to a certain level and then we plateau for a while. And sometimes it's 2 steps forward and 1's back. And so I think that there is a value in just having this be reinforced collectively and individually. My sense is that the deepening that we can experience probably is fathomless. You know, there's probably no end to it. It's completely individual, and maybe to a large extent out of our hands how deep we can go into it. But we can at least keep, let's say, pointing ourselves in this direction and get as much out of it as we can. Carol saying, when I connect with presence, I feel deep gratitude and joy. I recently had an insight that these feelings too are generated by thought. Yeah. And when I'm able to disidentify from all thoughts and feelings, whether positive or negative, what's left is deep and constant peace. On having the insight, I wrote down this experience was the pure ground of being, which is everything and nothing. That's it. Yeah. So there is also this thoughtless presence that I'm sure we all have at least moments when we touch that place. We talked about on that on the very first morning of the first weekend. We talked about the being so absorbed in something that momentarily it seems as if time stands still, or that we're outside of time. And it reminds me of what one Joseph Campbell talked about in one of his talks, where he talked about this as being the touching the eternal. And he said people think of eternity and they think it's a very long time. And he says that's a mistake. Eternity is beyond time. It's outside of time. It's that realm, that other dimension in which time ceases to exist for us. Like we momentarily are outside of the TikTok realm. And it does have a quality of being, a quality of presence and aliveness which it seems is still experienceable, if that's a word. We can still experience it without the intervention of thought. So even though we, in our everyday experience, we take in everything through this thought filter, which gives a certain color to our life experience. So as Carol's noticing, even the, even the positive feelings that we experience, they generally speaking will have positive thoughts associated with them. But there is also the possibility to glimpse the state of no thought, and it seems to have a, whilst it has a neutral, let's say, quality to it, it also still has an alive presence, which seems to be, is like the backdrop, like the background, if you like, to, from which, let's say, that place from which thought arises and to which it returns. Yeah, nice. It's nice to touch that place too. Leslie, you're saying, like Debbie, from time to time I get that I am and can live the life I want. Of course. Yeah. Drawing the Sun card from the tarot this evening reiterated that. This was one of the first things that came to me, and it's not the first time I've had that thought. There's been other times in my life when, let's say, I've been very clear, there's been a clarity has come to me, and it's had that corresponding feeling of almost invincibility. I can do pretty much whatever I put my mind to, whatever I decide, I can do it. There's a sort of a certainty which is just, it just comes from a place of inner knowing. It's not from a place of arrogance, or, and it's not connected to the idea that, it's gonna take a huge effort of will or willpower or anything of that kind. For me, it was just a very kind of calm certainty that whatever I moved towards or dedicated myself towards in that moment would come to be, would come to pass in my life, that it was eminently available and achievable, whatever it happened to be interested in at the time. And then I've lost it periodically, as I'm sure many of you have, and my options get narrowed down, and I can only see that, I have to keep doing this in order to do that, and and it's funny how that can seem just as real as the feeling of I can do anything seemed. So I suppose the wonderful thing is when, when you do find yourself just relaxing into that bigger field of possibility, and as those new choices become available to you, as they do, just notice the ones that grab you. Notice the things that pull you. Notice the things that have got some energy for you, and get on with them. That's the other aspect to this is, it's like, it's one thing to have that insight, and it's one thing to recognize what you're capable of, and yet it's another thing to act on that. And there's no, from in my experience, there's no better time than when you've just seen it. There's no better time to start the ball rolling in, if you've seen clearly that something that you could do that maybe you hadn't thought you were able to do before, or it hadn't seemed possible for various reasons, if you can see it as being possible today, then my suggestion is start some, at least some balls in motion that are going to move you in that direction. Just set the wheels in motion in some way. Move towards it. Act as if. And, as Joseph Campbell famously said, if you follow your bliss, then doors will open where you didn't even know there were doors. And for me, that's so true. But it all originates with that, having that clarity of mind in the first place, just seeing clearly for a moment. And that clarity shows you that all the apparent obstacles were not real. They were thought obstacles only. Thanks, Leslie. I love to get on with it. It's a good reminder. Well, I'm reminding myself too, it's a reminder for all of us. This, for me, this is it has incalculable value, just being able to settle, to settle into yourself and to connect with that source of creativity and original thinking that's within all of us. There's nothing that is more valuable than that, because that's the that's the wellspring from which everything else comes. And at the same time, we're required to take action sometimes. That's it's not going to happen without our input, without our participation. I think something that Jung wrote about that stayed with me as well. He said that when you've had an insight, a realization, you've got an ethical responsibility to yourself to live it out, to act in accordance with what you've seen and what you've understood. And I mean, he uses a different terminology, and he talks about it in terms of the unconscious coming, springing from the unconscious, and so on. But I know that he was also touching the same place in his own way. You can tell by what he says from that place. It's got the same resonant quality to it. And he spoke very forcefully about that in one of his papers, where he says you have this ethical responsibility to yourself to live in accordance with what you've seen and what you've realized. And if you don't, he would say that the unconscious is a nasty habit of biting you on the bum. In other words, I mean, my interpretation of that is now that we've become victims of our own thinking again, if we don't make use of the creative thoughts when they come. Yeah, Didi, as my 14-year-old would say, get it on. Get on with it, or get it on. It's the same, isn't it? Helen, you're saying in my work I'm able to enjoy it fully, and doors are opening, and it's amazing. That's fantastic. On Monday, I was chatting publicly, sharing my views. Had fun in a health shop, spending 2 hours chatting to customers and staff. And the staff were offering to hand out leaflets and told me when the store was busiest and offered a spot for me to be there again at that time. There's such an ease to it. That's great. This is not an option. It's what I must do, and it's all good. Yeah, that's a perfect example. And you just know it. It there's a timeliness to it. It feels right. It seems that life conspires to help you in lots of different ways. That's exactly what Joseph Campbell was pointing out with his famous quote: "Doors will open," and they do. And it's that. It's almost like the river of life that we've been flowing in. Suddenly, someone took the boulders out. All the obstacles and the dams and the boulders that were making it choppy and difficult. It's as if they all got removed, and suddenly you just get carried. You just get carried by life. It's a wonderful thing. And at the same time, you still got to say yes to it. They can offer you the room, and they can do this and the leaflet, and you can say, "Oh, maybe not. I'm a bit busy with something else." So I think also it speaks to that, just having that willingness to go with it, just to go with it. So take the leap, and to trust that it's going to work out. Helen saying, "I had clients referred to me already and already seen them." Wow, that's quicker. It shows you how quickly things can happen. It can go from having no practice to having a successful practice where people are already talking about you and sending their friends. And things can only grow from there. That's brilliant, Helen. That's great. Okay. Wow, I feel like we've had some input from almost everybody tonight. Who's hiding out there? Anybody else? Anybody else want to add anything? It's lovely to hear at least just to get snippets from all of you. It's really great. I really appreciate it. Especially when I thought nobody was going to say anything. You were just testing me, weren't you? See how long I could shut up for. Anything else? Yudka, there you are. Not hiding, just listening and enjoying. Thank you. Thank you too, Yudka. I knew you were there. I can see who's here, but I haven't checked the list for a while. Who else is there? Bernie, Chris, Ella, Jana, Sue. Bernie's hiding, but not on purpose. That's all right. That's all right. If you don't have anything to say, keep quiet. That's great. That's absolutely fine. But I'll just keep it open for a little bit longer, just in case anybody wants to. You want to add anything, ask anything, share anything. Sue, say me too, also like others who've posted, had some amazing and interesting things happen. Wow, now I want to know what they are. You want to share or do you want to save until the next weekend? It's up to you. Of course, it was not coincidental that when I was setting the dates for these, I was fully aware that this I was putting one in here in Christmas week, which I know is often it's an emotionally charged time for a lot of people. People often equate that to, you know, spending longer with your relatives than you would normally and that kind of thing. But whatever the reasons, I don't know. We can say that at least. It's a time when, as much as it can be a fun time and a holiday time and a getting together with people you haven't seen for a while can be great and so forth, it can also be stressful if our thinking goes in that direction. So I was also mindful of putting a webinar in just a few days before Christmas, thinking that I just thought it would be a nice just kind of way of setting the tone. Setting the tone for us all to go into this period of the year from a, let's say, a healthy psychological place as best as we can, and just touching that place within ourselves and together helps me anyway. It just helps me to reconnect with that. There's Sue. Clients, unexpected money coming in. Amazing stuff happening around me. Yay! We like that. That's great. That's really great. You can tell us more detail when we get together next time. But yeah, these are I would say these are the kind of positive side effects that you can fully expect, particularly if it's an area where it's felt like it's been a struggle. You know, like an area that's been a bit of a black hole energetically, or you've been putting a lot in and not much coming back, and suddenly that equation can turn around, and you start to see different possibilities, and the gates open. That's great. And Didi said, "Oh, it's the winter solstice tomorrow." Yeah, I guess it is. I don't know what day it is. So I have to look at. Some kind of calendar to even know what day of the week it is, but yeah, you're right, it's going to be solstice in the next day or two. Well, meanwhile, it seems my voice is just about expired, so I think I need to bring it to a close for this evening. Oh, there's Sue, what are you saying? Has anyone experienced the Christmas shopping experience? Has anyone else experienced Christmas shopping experience from a new angle? I seem to be in a completely different space to most of the people around me, who seem to be glazed over and struggling, etc. Well, that's partly what I was saying earlier. It's a good time to for us to remind ourselves of this. But it's also it's a time when it kind of makes everything visible, you know. How well we're doing, or how much we're caught in a thinking process, becomes quite visible at this time of year, I would suggest. So that's already a good sign if you're noticing the madding crowds in Oxford Street or wherever, and just seeing it differently, you know, and feeling differently about it. That's a good sign. Leslie, you say you're spending Christmas with relatives in the UK, first time in over 10 years. And yes, to the same shopping experience as Sue. Yeah. So yeah, whether it's on the high street or whether it's with your family, just noticing, you know, noticing the kind of feeling that you have around that. And noticing if it's any different. Sue's saying my husband's experiencing it too. That's nice. That's really great. Yeah. Let's spread the ripples out, shall we? We don't have to do anything, as you know, to make that happen, but I think we can at least, you know, we can set that intention that the people around us who we love dearly, and the ones who we have difficulty with, who we love dearly, you know, let's just put out that seed of possibility that they could pick up some of this from us without us even telling them about it, and get the benefit. I believe that there is a contagious element to this. We touched on this a bit last weekend. Some of you already seem to have had that kind of experience, and I'm sure it's true. I'm sure that some, you know, when our something in our energy field, which is, let's say, reflecting our the quality of our thinking and feeling, it definitely is going out and touching the people around us, and they're definitely going to respond differently to us if they pick up something that feels different to them. So, you know, it's not so far-fetched. Anyway, listen, thank you all, my friends. It's great to connect with you. I appreciate you clocking on here. And thank you, Dee Dee. Merry Christmas to all, and to all of you too. I hope that you can really enjoy this this time of year. And if any of it, you know, if any of it does become difficult or stressful, then just let it be passing. Just let it be just passing thought, rather than that's the reality of life. And I think that you know, that's the other thing. It's another thing I'm going to talk about, and the subsequent thing is this building resilience. That is another of the nice benefits of this. Is that okay? We're still going to get caught, and we're going to forget, but we can bounce back quicker. You know, that's also a good thing to look forward to. So thank you, everybody. Really looking forward to seeing you all in the new year. It'll be the beginning of Feb. We might have another webinar before then. In fact, we probably do. I can't remember the date, but it'll be in the diaries somewhere. And I'll speak to you again soon. Keep me posted if you have any amazing insights. Always happy to hear from you. And this one will have been recorded, so it'll go up as a recording tomorrow once it's been processed. And as I say, I'll do my best with the remaining videos, and if I can't get them to fully function as videos, I'll put the at least the audios up for those of you who missed some or all of last weekend. Alright, good evening to you all. I'll leave the chat open for just a few more minutes if any of you want to make use of that. But I'm going to switch off my mic now, and I wish you all lots of love. Christmas and the New Year. Bye bye.